Welcome to episode 362 of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast.
This week we're talking the top 10 Warner Brothers films. Hit that thing, son. What's up, folks? We're back with the podcast from two brothers you've been warned about. Nailed it. My name is Wayne.
Oh, that's so terrible.
Yeah, baby.
It's so terrible. It's derailed me completely. My name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We count down movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness. And this week, in celebration of the release of The Batman, the first big film for 2022, we decided to launch our countdowns of films by studio.
Yes.
It only seemed appropriate that Warner Brothers would be first cab, therefore
the WB
off the rank. Now, Wayne, the criteria you had here was simple in theory, but when we investigated, it got incredibly complex.
Like everything, it's more complex, yes. The rule we had set down is that if Warner Brothers just distributed the film, which sometimes happens,
yep,
that doesn't count. They have to at least have produced or co-produced.
Yeah, as long as they were sinking money into it, involved in the development, not just picking up the finished product and then saying, here you are, world. It counts. And we went off Wikipedia.
There's a
list of films by Warner Brothers according to Wikipedia. And whatever it said in that big table is what we went with.
As long as it says.
We dug a little bit deeper in some films. It got very convoluted, very complicated. And then we both realized we have a life and we cannot dedicate more than X amount of that to this
research,
podcast.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if it's on the list.
Especially after last week.
Oh my God, what a shit show.
Yeah, we're going to get into that. Let's get into last week straight away then in a segment which opens most every show. It's called The Recount.
Word.
Who wants a recount?
Who?
Who wants a recount?
Who?
Who wants a recount?
Who?
Who wants a recount?
Recount time. Paul, what happened?
Well, last week, top 10 neo-noir films.
Mm-hmm.
Wayne, you won comfortably again. 37 votes to 24. And apparently I sunk myself by having The Matrix at number 10. Chris Yeaney, patron extraordinaire, said I would almost be on board with Paul's number 10 if he didn't have much better honorable mentions at 11 to 13.
I do that a lot, apparently.
Yeah, and don't get penalized for it. Adam Allure, top level patron of the show, said I respect Paul's choice of The Matrix. Protagonist and over the head, check. Prominent use of light and shadows, check. Borderline check, he said. Femme fatale character, whoa. In fact, what he said was,
Whoa, hold on.
Welcome to the soundboard. Smiley, mate to the show, and I said, crikey, how about did you both bomb this brief? I was just waiting for you to mention, one of you to mention Die Hard, then justify that being neo-noir. No vote for either of you because you guys sucked, but geez, you made me laugh.
Yeah, that's all we want
to
do.
That's all Wayne wants to do.
fine, bud. Yeah, you know, look, it was, I'll be honest with you, that show was fucking shit, because we were like so polite to each other because we knew we fucked each other's up. Like, I was like, I want to put my foot in Paul's ass, but I'm about to do the exact same thing that he did, so I don't know how I'm gonna handle this. So, you know,
because we're not hypocrites.
That's right.
Too often. Troy Spinner, so who very often, what a great guy, puts our list the Facebook community where you can vote for who has the superior list, hence 37 to 24 this week, taking you, by the way, to a 3-1 lead on the year. Okay, team, he wrote, here's the list for episode 361 of the top 10 neo noir films. That could be neo-noir, maybe, if we kept the brief loose and can convince each other enough. That was the title of the episode.
Exactly what happened, he called it.
Mary Clemmie Hill said, so sorry, Paul, but Wayne gets my vote this week for mostly one reason. Out of motherfucking sight.
What up, girl? That's a sexy movie.
Blew me away. Perfection. Film schools could be built around that flick. Also, Wayne just had a better list, in my totally non-humble opinion. Cheers. Oh, and this is for you, Paul. Looks like a cactus picture of a dick. So I'm not sure what that means, but okay. Brad Hargis from the Cinema Guys podcast. You can check out their Patreon feed where I have done 3 weeks of Apes movies as directed by Matt Reeves.
Bloody hell.
Dark City is absent from both lists and not even mentioned. Some of it goes to Paul this time.
Yo, hooray. Tell you about Dark City, son. That movie was great until it sucked.
There you go. That's all.
There you go.
That's all Wayne.
That's all I'm saying.
Wanted to say. And then lastly, from Julio from the Contrarians podcast, a.k.a. Jon Snow. I can't support The Matrix shenanigans. You've gone too far, Paul. Which I replied, okay, so Wayne goes too far. Julio often says, oh, that's cute. Here's my vote. I admire the balls, the audacity on Wayne for this. Paul goes too far. I will smite down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, you may have detected that you've poked the bear. Paul's Paul's obsession with fairness does not allow him to compute.
I will end this podcast, motherfuckers.
See, that shit happens all the time, man. You gotta watch with that shit. But you know what? Keep it coming. Fuck!
I will end this podcast and everything to do with it.
See?
Because it's you hold us to the same standards, or you don't have no standards at all. Or just end the vote. That's a much easier way of going.
You are and keep listening. We love you, Paul's a bitch. What do you want to do?
What the hell? No!
Love this shit.
Anyway, you smashed me. You won 37-24. We'll see what happens this week. I make no promises about this list either.
Oh,
except
God.
It fits the brief, because it does. Everything's on that list.
Well, let me tell you something about this, Paul. Here it is.
Use your words.
I'm gonna lose this one, and I'll tell you why. I know you think it's a tactic. It's not. I'll tell you what.
Suck my dick.
The film's on my list. I'm looking at them, right? And I'm like, yeah, we've talked about a lot of these all the time.
Of course.
Right?
Unfortunately, this is gonna be a best of a best for me.
Totally. But here's my angle, right? There are films that are technically far better than ones on my list that you would think would go higher up here at all. But I've decided to go with my favorite.
That's what we always do. I'm not. Otherwise, I would have.
But it will be difficult for me to justify these with you. But I will have fun trying. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure.
You're gonna sputter.
Once again, listen. Once again, Wayne's like, oh, he's done such a different thing. Votes for Wayne.
See, it doesn't go that way. You're full of shit. But what you want?
Adelaide Lord today posted up just before we recorded, a picture of one of the Countdown Movie TV News shirts with Eat All the Asses on it prominently. And here was her response. Super excited for my new shirt. I'm just not sure it'll be appropriate for any first dates I have.
It would with me, Adelaide.
Inconceivable.
Whoa. Hold on.
Good stuff.
Let's not sexually harass our listeners, please, Wayne.
It was about me, not her, damn it.
I know it was a joke. Family gatherings, on the other hand, now that joke's all been missed, but very funny.
Oh, please.
Can wear that to family gatherings when she invites her family to eat
family gathering.
All the asses. So well done, Adelaide. That is fantastic. And then to wrap up this week's recount, we've got an email. Doesn't happen very often these days in this fast-paced world of social media. This comes from a mate of mine, Campbell, who listens to the show. Thank you, Campbell.
Ah, Jean-Claude Van Cam. What's up, man? Ain't seen him in a while.
No, we haven't seen many people in a row thanks to COVID. Mm-hmm. Campbell said, great topic, a favorite genre of mine, hence my Letterboxd name, Crab Noir. There you go, little plug there. Okay. Follow Crab Noir on Letterboxd. Difficult to define, and you possibly made it harder by sticking to such a strict definition. I think we probably
did. That was our mistake.
He basically said, I much preferred Paul's list, but Wayne made the best point during the podcast where your definition stated the lead in over his head. Wayne's comment was more on point. A conflicted person who is essentially a good person in over their head. In a noir featuring a cop, they are either on the take, have a gambling problem, or fabricate evidence, etc. So he basically pissed on my choice of drive because Ryan Gosling had a heart and clearly cares for the mother and kid, but essentially he's a thief and a thug, but an anti-hero, not a noir lead.
See, this is how technical this shit gets.
Mm.
So, again, I think he says it's about feel or whatever, right? It's just how the movie kind of appears. So it's way too broad. We went way too clean and local. That's on me.
Well, apparently I agreed at the time.
Yeah, you did agree.
It's on recording.
Yeah. What are we going to do?
Anyway, long story short, that was a hard one. And look, why are we blaming ourselves? Let's blame Geordie, who gave us this topic. No, we love Geordie.
Didn't know we were going
to
fuck
it. Geordie did not expect us to fuck this topic right. Yeah. We will do a much cleaner effort this week. That's all we can promise you. Thank you so much for your emails and your feedback and for your votes. And the only place to vote is in the Facebook community. Link is in the show notes. Thank you for everyone who took the time to do so. Let's get into it then. On the other side of this music cue, the topic for this week's the top 10 Warner Brothers films. Top 10 Warner Brothers films!
Well, that makes it better. Excellent.
It's the topic of this week's countdown. We've already described the criteria Wikipedia is to blame or to give all the glory to. And how about I lead away, Wayne?
Why don't you go, son?
My number 10.
Ooh,
not a bad choice. Just intake a breath because I wanted to get the right quote in here. Oh, and please. It is getting too old for this shit. My number 10 is Lethal Weapon.
The first one?
Yeah.
Wow. Interesting choice. Please tell me about Lethal Weapon.
Rewatched all these films in the life of the podcast with ex-epic film guy, now Nikolai's kitchen guy, Nicholas Haskins.
Interesting.
And found the first one to be on par with the second one, which was traditionally my favorite of the lot.
Funny you should mention that, because that one's on my list. But let's talk about number one.
This is where all the magic begins.
True.
So, of course, Danny Glover, who was only about 40 at the time that this film was made.
Is that so?
Bucking for retirement.
Too old for this shit.
Too old for this shit. Yep. Yeah. And up against Riggs, who is a complete loose cannon, and how the two of them come to care for each other. And this is arguably, is it the greatest buddy cop film ever made?
It's probably the one you point to when you say buddy cop, unless you want to say like Midnight Run, which isn't buddy cop, it's buddy...
No, it's a bounty hunter and a bloke who's trying to hunt.
Probably. You look at this one and you go, that's
is the archetype, right? This definitely set the mold for the next 20 years. Tangos and Cashes guys.
I guess, yeah, you're right. Maybe you're right. Because you know what? There was never the specific dynamic of aging cop, young buck.
Or just two completely opposite personalities to moving in a police sense. Obviously, the odd couple, all the rest of that was the real archetype of this.
Yeah.
But in terms of putting it in a police action film.
I wonder if without this movie, you don't get movies like Colors. You know, Robert Duvall and fucking Sean Penn. Was it before this? But that wasn't buddies. They were just young cop, old cop. You know, so maybe it's a thing. But either way, it's this shit. I know the Lethal Weapon's the shit. I remember that shit. You know what I remember about Lethal Weapon? At the beginning, right? The cold open to Lethal Weapon is this woman walking out onto a balcony and she's wearing...
Don't say it.
No, here's what happened. This is why it's awkward, right? So she's wearing a robe of some sort and her titties are out. So
he said it.
No, but like... And it's like long, lingering titty shots and I'm sitting there watching it with my grandparents and fucking parents and shit. And I'm like, this is really awkward. I don't want to be here anymore. And the shot of the titties would not stop. It just went on and on. And then she falls. Now, the cool thing was the camera did that thing where it actually fell off.
That shot.
That was like cool.
And if we had to really summarize all of Lethal Weapon's influence in one moment.
Titties. Oh, sorry.
No.
Yes.
Apparently, I didn't lead off with that.
Actually, it was
and I just sort of, every time Wayne mentioned a sentence there in that whole description, I should have been like.
Or should you? Did you think, though, with Lethal Weapon, okay, so Martin Riggs, the best thing about his scene is that, you know, his opening is in the Christmas tree thing and he's trying to pay for it. And then what happens is he's firing with someone on the floor and then he rolls as he was firing to shoot the motherfuckers. That was the coolest shit ever. And when we had BB guns, you and I did it over and over. Do you remember that shit?
I remember any money. Any mini money.
That's good shit.
And of course, the bit where he's being tortured by the dude from Die Hard who's in every action film in that era.
The Asian dude?
Yep.
Yeah.
And he gets up and breaks his neck with his legs.
With his legs, yep. Which apparently...
First time I ever saw that shit.
Oh, it was so cool. But the idea that you're putting torture in a movie like this, and what was cool about it at the end is when they're like, I gotta
80s, man. That just went
the 80s.
Hardcore.
Yeah, and it was really cool that like Mel Gibson decided to fuck off like and just get a sniper rifle and just start taking motherfuckers out. That was a cool tactic when they're going to like get his daughter and shit.
That was before that scene, wasn't it?
That was the end scene, man. It was before the scene. You're right, it was right before
the escape
scene.
And he's running along. That great iconic shot when he's sprinting with the machine gun. And then he has a big fight with Gary Busey on the... On the front lawn with the...
You want to shout out the title?
Yeah.
Don't mind if I do.
Yep. Good shit. Lethal Weapon, my number 10.
Very nice. My number 10 is a favorite movie of mine because I think it's one of my favorite comedies of all time. I've seen it at least 20 times.
Wow.
Spies Like Us.
Wow.
Yeah.
Chevy Chase, Dan Aykroyd.
Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd. Now, let me tell you about this show, right? This is one of the most on-point comedies I've seen. Dan Aykroyd and Fletch are at the top of their game, right? Every single line, and again, look, it's a 1980s fucking comedy, so, you know, I don't know how well it wears, but I always enjoy watching it. And
when was the last time you watched it?
Last time I watched it was probably about 2 years ago. It
wasn't that long ago, so you know how well it wears.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I still love it, but I might love it for me. See, the story is...
Nostalgia.
Yeah. Dan Aykroyd, Chevy Chase, they are dudes who cheat on a government test, and they get caught doing it, so the government puts them in a thing and says, hey, we're having trouble with Russia. We're going to send you guys as agents to Russia to do shit because they need them to be decoys. They know they're idiots, but they're like, just send them over there. make the Russians think that we're doing something else and we'll do our real operation.
So basically, this is effectively an autobiography of Steven Seagal before it ever actually happened.
Yeah, except people like these people. So, like, they go to Russia and
I don't know whether people really like Chevy Chase.
Oh, yeah. I mean, these characters. Okay. But they went to Russia and are trying to avert a nuclear war by, you know, and it's a various bullshit means. But the training session of them trying to be agents is just the funniest thing ever. And it's very slapsticky, I'll be honest with you.
That was the era.
It was the era, but they're on fine form. Like, it's the best work either of them.
Do not see slapstick comedy in the 21st
you
century.
You don't. You know why? Because
the closest thing was Jim Carrey after he stopped sort of doing comedic roles.
With the faces and everything?
Yep.
And you can fuck it up so easily. The whole 10 yards, for example, is just Matthew Perry pratfalling over and over, and it gets tired after the third one, which happens in 10 minutes.
Was it him pratfalling, or was it him just high on drugs?
No. Yeah, you're right. It looked deliberate, but who knows? He's a good actor, maybe. I don't know. So, yes, Spies Like Us is my number 10, everyone. One of my favorite films.
Okay, fair enough. Did not see that one coming, but that is okay. My number 9 is a film which was made a big splash in terms of its visual stylings, in terms of its slow motion effects.
Interesting.
It was sort of solidified an auteur, really, because you know a Zack Snyder film when you see it.
Oh, yes.
300.
Boy. Great show.
Not on your list?
Not on my list, but could have easily been. It's one of those.
From 2006, based on a Frank Miller graphic novel, and a film which just... I remember one of the greatest trailers ever made. That the visual stylings of this trailer where I saw that shit where they're pushing them off the cliff and they're falling into the ocean with that ship floating. Oh, so good. This film is as close an approximation, other than maybe Sin City, which of course doesn't feature today, as being a graphic novel brought to life on screen for me.
Do you know what? If you've actually read the graphic novel, which actually looks a lot like Sin City because it's Frank Miller as well, it's actually drawn like shit. Frank Miller can't draw for fucking shit. I've always hated his shit.
All right. Some Wayne people doesn't like Frank Miller. Pissed,
right? No, he's a good writer, but he can't draw dick, right? So this movie itself actually looks like a Sistine Chapel painting every frame does. The way it's colored, the way it's lit, the way it's whatever, right? That's why it's so cool. The fucking slow-mo of all the arrows out the sun, or even the girl swimming around in air.
Our arrows will blot out the sun.
The sun will fight in the shade. So all that kind of shit was awesome. And of course, that pan shot, where it's the first battle where they're taking out motherfuckers.
The dolly to the side.
Zoom in, zoom out. Dolly, you're fucking... Yeah, it's a dolly, right? It's a dolly. That is... I remember just dropping my jaw when I saw that.
Astounding looking film. And I love that idea of, you know, the Alamo, basically. But of course, set before the Alamo, where based on some obscure potential possible battle that happened in history, where this 300 group of Spartans held against a far superior force. I don't think it was 1 million Persians, but it was.
So grand that when the boats come and the sea smashes them and stuff like that, there's hundreds of thousands of boats by the looks of things.
It's amazing.
And then when the people come, there's so many millions of dudes. There's no way there could be that many people coming over. But it makes sense for this movie because it's so grand. So it's really cool.
And do you remember when Jared Butler was cool? Well, if you don't, watch this movie.
Because we didn't even know who he was when we saw this thing. We just this guy and they're all beefcake and what are you going to do? So,
Dave, everyone, a Fassbender in this movie as well.
I know, Mike is in that movie. Shit. Yeah.
Look, I still find this film incredible. It's been a while since I've watched it, I have to be honest, but I must have watched it 5-6 times. And that's not the kind of thing I do normally after a film comes out. So in the first 2 or 3 years after it released, it was just one I went back to again and again to appreciate how gorgeous it looked, how much fun I had with it. It's not the smartest film ever. It's not going to blow your mind in that way, but in terms of a spectacle, there are a few better films.
This is the litmus, or this is the actual proof that Zack Snyder should only direct someone else's story. He's so good at that. He's just not a good writer.
Yeah, I agree.
Not a good writer, but not the best. So, yeah.
Agreed.
Nice one. My number 9 is actually Lethal Weapon 2.
Yes.
2.
Great
okay?
film. Great sequel.
Now, I'm interested, Paul. You said you reviewed all of them. Put them in order. Worst to best. I bet I know what it is.
Look... If you said right now, watch one, I'd probably pick 2 to watch.
Yeah.
But which one started it? Which one it creates that magic, right? It's 1.
Yeah.
1 is the one that stands
out. I can see how it would be in your head.
For me in that regard.
Totally.
And watching them again, what happened was 1 and 2 came together so close to be almost indiscernible.
There you go.
And they seem to, I think, run together perfectly as a duology of a film.
So you must
3 is garbage. 3 is really terrible. Dumb bullets and fucking Stuart Wilson is a bad guy. Fucking crap.
It is the worst of
4 is an improvement on 3.
4 is great because then like Richard Donner was doing his fucking... Basically, he's looking at Hong Kong cinema and doing that. With the fucking Jet Li and shit. It's fucking wicked. Yeah,
okay, straight away. Jet Li is your bad guy.
Yeah.
Stuart Wilson is your bad guy.
Yeah, I know.
I rest my case.
Yeah, I think I like the opening credits of 3. But now that we're talking about 2, I will tell you that.
Oh, is that it's probably me?
Yeah, probably me with the fire. It's fucking beautiful. But this, well, speaking of which, Lethal Weapon 2's opening is just like
straight
Lethal
into
Weapon.
It.
But there's actually this, there's like.
We ain't gonna make it, right? We ain't gonna make it. Yeah, we'll make it.
Dude, oh,
you're right, Raj,
that,
we didn't make it.
Exactly. But before that scene even starts, Paul, it begins in the opening credits with just dark, like dramatic sort of drum rolly, and then it segs into a cartoonish banjo twang Looney Tunes.
Does it?
That's what it does for a sec. Then it's like the words go Lethal Weapon, then the two comes down. And you see this
Michael
flash.
Score. Bam.
No, but then it just cuts. No, trust me, it doesn't do that. Check it out again. Go look at it on YouTube.
Oh, I
right?
believe you. I believe
yeah,
you.
It starts with a Looney Tunes thing, and it's like, oh, that's setting the tone.
Well, I thought they were in a car chase immediately.
Right before that. Because then what happens is when it goes shroom, it just is a shot of Martin Riggs going, whoa, screaming in a car and punching the roof of the car because he's in a car chase. Right?
Right, yes.
And that's the actual, but the right before that, that's
but the
what
first
happens.
Footage.
Yeah, like literally the first 3 seconds or so of it is like that. And then that's what this whole thing is. These two are actually having a bickering argument during a car chase, getting shot at, almost fucking up the car, all that sort of shit. The reason that this one
well, I do
works,
fuck up the car is he scrapes it down.
Scrapes it down the thing.
We didn't make it right.
And I remember me watching with my dad. My dad's just laughing his ass off, going, yeah, right. Mel Gibson's really likable. Was likable.
He was.
I still think it's time we forgave him. Okay? It's like, he's getting re-employed now. I think Hollywood's forgiving him. I know.
Look, if we don't, not saying we need to forgive him, but it's fine. Let's just move on. I think as long as he minds his P's and Q's.
I think it's been like 15 years or something. Something ridiculous like that. So yeah, anyway, whatever. The point is, there's the confidence flowing through this film that carries you along. The execution of number 2 is better because you already know the characters, so they can move within their
but
character.
I see what you're saying, but also the delight. It's like going back to watch a sequel to anything. You know what to expect now.
Agreed. I think that the magic of 2 had a lot to do with Leo Getz.
Magic is back again.
Yes, magic is back. Leo Getz, that shit was good, man. That whole thing was good. I'm telling you. Because
he was good in that one. By 3, another reason that film sucks, they over-rely on Joe Pesci.
Oh, 3, yeah, 3, forget that, yeah. But like, you know, and then as if it all weren't enough, Patsy kens it. So I'm just like, that is all wicked shit. And this, you know, diplomatic immunity, that whole thing.
Been revoked.
I remember at the end when Riggs gets shot by fucking.
He was supposed to die there.
Yeah, was he?
Yeah, that, in the original script, he dies.
Dude, I'm so glad he didn't because blam, blam, blam. I remember feeling genuinely sad because it was like he was just on the floor and then just been revoked, blam, right? But I'm so glad they kept on going. I think, are they doing 5?
Yes, Mel Gibson's directing it because Richard Donner, sadly, rest in peace.
Yeah.
Yeah, so apparently that's just been greenlit.
I'm in, motherfucker. He's an Academy Award winning director.
How is this going to be good? With the ages that they are. So in this universe, Danny Glover is now 97 years old. Or Murtog is 97 years old.
Okay, the only way this works, Paul, right, is if they're both retired, but for some reason they're either PIs or maybe they
is
both
it
going to
be a fucking legacy sequel? No, requel.
Where
they bring a couple of young bucks in to replace them and they're guiding them.
Oh, wait, so maybe Mel Gibson's not in it?
No, he's in it. He has to be. He can't have a Lethal Weapon. Can't call Lethal Weapon that Riggs and Murtog.
Yeah, you're right. And so.
Or Metal.
Metal. Yeah, so. No, that's what it is. I reckon they get called back for some reason because some old case, possibly the first case, Paul, which I can't remember now.
No, they both died.
Oh, you're right. They all got died. Yep. Okay, some reason they all come back and they're consultants to the LAPD.
Stuart Wilson is back from the dead, literally, and in the film.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. Well, sorry, Stuart Wilson's family.
Well, I'm sure they listen. Yeah, so there you are. Look, Lethal Weapon 2. That's my number 2.
Very small proportion of the world doesn't listen.
There you are.
Here we are. All right, my number 8 is Martin Scorsese's masterpiece, Academy Award winning, The Departed.
Departed.
Yep.
Not on my list. Yeah. I know, but because I'm doing that, but totally deserved to be. The Departed was so good, I want to shit my pants, actually, to be honest with you.
The greatest remake ever made? Guess we'll find out in short order when we do the topic in the next month or so. Revisit it. The Departed. I liked it when I watched it. I think it was my film of 2006, my favorite film. But I thought 2006 was a really weak year in film.
Okay, only you would know that. But I know that Departed is one of the most universally loved films I've ever come across. Everyone I know likes the Departed.
Obviously based on Infernal Affairs from Hong Kong.
Which I then went to watch, right?
Very good as well.
Very good.
Very good. Second one, very good. Third one, fucking pants.
Oh, really? Yeah, I saw the one that this one was based on. Departed is better than it, though.
Well, wouldn't you expect it to be? You've got...
Not always, Paul.
A bunch of...
Point Break remake was shit.
Yes, but that's because Martin Scorsese wasn't directing it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You take Martin Scorsese, one of the most celebrated filmmakers in this lifetime.
Easily.
And you give him a second go at a script which is already very good.
Perhaps you're right. You know what?
What a shock that it turns out to be better and it wins Academy Awards. But and to be fair, they probably it was a Lifetime Achievement Award, right? I'm not sure whether The Departed would have won other years. I can't remember what other films were up against. I love the fact that it won, but has he made better films? Yep.
Well, yes, but not every film has Alec Baldwin in it stealing the entire goddamn movie.
Or
okay.
What you believe is Mark Wahlberg's first of many great performances.
He's a great performance in this. He's good really, really good.
He got nominated for Academy Award. Yeah.
Yeah, but like Alec Baldwin's like, you know.
This is where Mark Wahlberg's fucking peaks and ends, is good acting performances, as far as I'm concerned.
All the Money in the World is a really good performance.
Oh, God, we have this conversation.
wait, there's something else.
How about we just talk about the people that matter?
Okay, fine.
DiCaprio, Damon, and of course Jack Nicholson.
And Alec Baldwin. I'm telling you, his whole thing there, you're helping that, go fuck yourself. That's good shit, man. Really good shit. Anyway, and also he didn't shoot anyone. Sorry. All right, so
yeah. Anyway, I think this film is fantastic and one of the best of the modern era of gangster films and organized crime films.
Oh, this is just way up there.
I didn't, as much as I thought it was my favorite film in 2006, I didn't rate it as highly as I did upon a rewatch 3 or 4 years ago. I'm like, holy shit, this film is good. Mm. Take out the on the nose fucking rat running across the wall at the very end. And this, that
I forgot about the rat.
Annoyed the shit out of me. I think a lot of people, it's just, there's no need, Martin Scorsese. What I did read though in doing the research for today's topic is there is the use of an X, like a cross, whenever a character is going to die.
Really? What, just somewhere in the film?
So even when DiCaprio's character, spoilers for a film from 16 years ago.
Yeah, spoilers, 3, 2, 1.
He's about to be shot. Behind him on the wall of the elevator, there's a cross.
Do you see it before he goes?
Yeah.
And I gotta rewatch it now.
Same when Martin Sheen dies.
I gotta rewatch
same
it.
Same when Matt Damon dies. Same when Costello dies.
That means, for Matt Damon, that was when he walks into the apartment and then Marky Mark's blam. So where's the fucking X? I gotta look for the X now. I gotta watch again. Thanks, Paul.
Yeah. So all I thought that was just, that's Scorsese. He's giving you 2-3 layers deeper than what you already appreciate.
That's where genius comes in, mm-hmm. I think, when you start getting that kind of a filmmaker. So, yeah.
That's my 8, The Departed.
Very nice. My number 8 is, in a huge contrast, Swordfish.
Oh, my
God. I fucking love Swordfish. And, dude, people often shit on this film. Lots of people consider this a terrible movie, but I love it. And I think there's a lot about this that is surprisingly memorable. I stand resolute, motherfucker!
Oh, my God.
Dude.
Sullied The Departed.
Hang on a second, motherfucker. Check this shit out, okay? When this movie came out, which I owned on Laserdisc, okay? That opening scene where fucking John Travolta is in the cafe with the fucking, you know, he's just talking seemingly with Hugh Jackman and Don Cheadle. And there's this whole thing, and it's very, like, self-aware despite being what they call a, you know, an unrealistic film. John Travolta is just talking about, the thing I hate about Hollywood is it just shit. They'll just have shit movies. And it's like, pop, 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 pop. They make all shit. And then this movie again goes on to be the most believable
when's
kind
the,
of.
When is the, this film is what, 2001,
2000s, early 2000s.
Yep. So it comes after The Matrix.
Yeah. Joel Silver action movie.
So they've propositioned again the whole bullet time thing for that explosion, which was very memorable. Ooh,
dude, at the time, yeah, that's it. So literally when they walk up, but it's so cool that he just gets up after talking to these guys. And, you know, you ready? And then you see the wide shot and it's like 200 SWAT, well, a few SWAT guys around him. Everyone had guns on him the whole time he was talking and ordering coffee. That's cool. Then he goes out, explosion, wicked bullet time, whatever you want to call it. It was amazing looking. And then the whole film ends up being stylish as fuck, man.
Did you have a brain tumor for breakfast?
Fuck you. I was, dude, if you go watch this again, all right, you'll be sitting there going to yourself, okay, I'll just watch an opening bullet time explosion thing. That'll be cool. Then you get to the scene where Wolverine's O-face is on when that woman's blown him while he's trying to hack into the thing. I remember seeing the
is
actual...
that before or after Halle Berry gets her breasts out?
That is before. Hmm. It's almost the first act of the film. But I remember seeing the actual...
$500,000 per breast.
Yeah, I know.
If anyone's listening, I will pay $500,000 per ball.
I think people would rather see your nipples fall.
That I will do for
$2.50. So, the actual bits in this show that are like that, where he does all the hacking and stuff, I remember seeing the actual credit, was it like director's thing, where they were trying to do that scene, and it's like, even the girl unit director said, look, are you going to make her suck his dick or not? This scene is boring unless someone is sucking his dick. And that was the actual, I'm like, you know what? This is how you make those movies. So it's like,
I think you're finding insight how this film wound up at Wayne's number 8.
No, it's nothing to do with blowies. What I'm saying to you is, even at the end of the film, it actually doesn't end the way you think it will. And it does actually surprise you. And then it's very meta because John Travolta's like, not everything ends the way you think it will. But it's still satisfying. Very cool. Very cool show. I love it.
I'm sure the Julios of the world right now are going...
Does Julio like the show?
I have no idea, but it's an out there pick which no one will punish you for.
You are really bitter this one. Like, oh, damn. Okay.
All right. Anyway, my number seven actual good film is called Gravity.
Also considered, but not.
Directed by Alfonso Cuarón, and it is arguably one of the greatest cinema experiences I've ever had. Those one shots and being completely enveloped as Sandy B and Georgie C.
George Clinton.
Are up there in the working on their space station when calamity befalls them and they have to try to survive. And those opening, that there's 30, 40 minutes of film, which is basically three shots. Yes, mm-hmm. It's all composite, it's all special effects.
Doesn't matter.
Does it look amazing?
Does it
totally immerse you in the film? Is it absolutely top tier filmmaking? Fucking yes every time.
You know what I always thought was cool? Even when the very opening shot of the movie where they close up on the space station and you see you only notice this dude, it's actually George Clooney, he's like, he's just spacewalking with his little jets and stuff and it looked really awesome. I'm like, is that what he's doing? He's just flying around space talking about shit? Really, really wicked. There's no doubt that this is as good as filmmaking or cinematography at the very least gets.
And what I really love about this film, in stark contrast to what the pattern seems to be or the style seems to be right now, even 8-9 years later, is it's 91 minutes. This film grabs you by the testicles,
yeah,
or the lady bits, and just drags you along, and it's over in a flash.
Yeah,
this does not waste a frame in this movie. It's not padded out. It doesn't feel the need to make it to 2 hours just because that's what big blockbusters do. It has a story to tell, and it does it in an economic way, I should say, without worries about that bigger sort of thing. Hats fucking off.
Let me ask you this. So obviously the big theme in the movie is rebirth, and he gives it to you over and over and over again.
Right, the way to crawling out of the water at the end.
The biggest one is the umbilical thing where she's coiled up, right? Now, I have heard some critics go about that slapping you in the face. I disagree 100%. Those images are stark. They are not obvious. They're thought-provoking and in your face. They're not hacky. Those are absolutely wicked. The idea that that thing is in there and he only takes 90 minutes to give you his moments, I love all that shit, man.
Well, she's being reborn. She's going to be a different person after this.
Yeah, and she's already kind of troubled stuff. Because she lost she's got her own thing. And
it's funny. You pick it up, obviously, if you're a film critic and you've studied film and you've done your courses and you've done your whatevers. But for the average audience member, myself most definitely included, I need that level of kind of
absolutely. Slap across I your do face. Too. I wasn't.
Otherwise,
gonna...
I would have missed it.
Well, if it's not at least that obvious, then it's conjecture. As far as I'm concerned, you can interpret it any way you want. But this, I know the filmmaker
can go too
wanted
far,
me to know,
and I can understand. And I can understand a critic saying or a person saying it was too hard. In the same way that I said that Departed, the rat across the fucking wall at the end wasn't needed.
Yeah. It's all about the execution, man. Yeah. And I think the way it worked is great. Because when she was floating in that chamber and there's the umbilical and she looks like a fetus, I'm like, oh my God, look at what he's doing. Look what he's doing. I was impressed. So yes, it's wicked.
Yeah. All right. That's my number seven. Yours, sir.
God, this is going to go so bad for me. My number seven is Tango and Cash.
Look, it's not on my honorable mentions, but I meant to put it on there.
Understandable. Everyone, Tango and Cash for the uninitiated.
Sorry, please. Tango and Cash. Cash,
tango,
and
tango, cash, tango. I Ripley's Believe It or Not. So everyone, Sly Stallone and Kurt Russell are narcotics cops that are sort of rival cops in the same town, and they both like they jockey for the front page news of all the butts they do. They're super cops, okay? Except Kurt Russell is all like hang dog, cool, and check out my bomber jacket and jeans. And Sly Stallone, he all got suits, plays the stock market, and wears glasses.
Tie pins, shit like that. Which is the exact opposite of if you were casting this at the time, you probably would have thought it would go.
I never even thought about that. But I like
Sly. I think they're both playing his type. Like, I mean, I know that Kurt Russell can play anything, right? Yeah. But Sly Stallone couldn't play the suit wearing fucking executive or
that
whatever.
That was actually a phase he went through. He started wearing those Oscar three-piece suits. Yeah, like out in public and shit. So, right. And personally, I was there for it. I'm like, Sly, you go, girl. It's like the shit, right? So anyway, this movie is them getting together and various things happen, but the big bad crime boss of the city frames the both, puts them in jail. They have to work their way out. They have to save the whole fucking and destroy the thing. It's so cool because, one, it's the movie Paul and I became friends on, pretty much.
Absolutely. FUBAR. Right.
FUBAR, yeah, okay. Two, everyone liked Terry Hatcher. Three, there was just memorable cool scenes in it from Kurt Russell in drag, which, yes, was a thing in the 90s, but I'm sorry it was funny.
Kurt Russell and drag in the 2020s would be just fine.
You know what? I would be fine with it and would probably ask him out. So, and
I'd have to shave the beard, though.
I like a rough chin. and it's such an... Is it 90s? When is this fucking
thing? 89, yeah, I think.
89, all right? Yeah. So it's such that at the end of this, buddy cop... Here's your buddy cop shit right here.
Again, following on for the
following on, bro. Yep. And they actually have this massive action scene where somehow they procure basically a tank, an LAPD tank, and the end scene is them driving around this warehouse with shit blowing up behind them, and the tank is armored and has guns on it. Of course! And it's just taking motherfuckers out.
It's an anti... Is it a personnel... Whatever, yeah, APC.
Well, in this movie, the LAPD has a Q division where underneath there's this... That dude that talks like this, yes, is like a weapons or quartermaster that makes special weapons for the LAPD. I mean, sure. Why not? Why not? Okay? So that's why it's awesome. And
are you therefore saying Tango and Cash is better than any Lethal Weapon?
No, I knew you were going to say this, Paul. I knew you were going to bring this shit up, Mr. Motherfucking Accountant. Okay?
Fair question.
No, fuck you. I'm saying to you that this is... I'll watch this more times than I watch Lethal Weapon 2. How's that? So that's how this list is going to go. And you're about to see how nasty it is, by the way. Okay. This is nothing, bye. This is nothing.
As long as you're acknowledging that one is a better film
absolutely
than the other.
Absolutely.
And that's all right.
You know what? Yeah, okay, absolutely.
All right, please. Do continue.
Well, it's more enjoyable. So is it therefore not
for
better
you, it's a better
me?
Film?
Yeah. I suppose technically one could say that the other one broke more ground. All right, fine. Yes, the other one is better, but I like this one more. Yeah.
All right, well, speaking about a film that broke ground, but it also came out at the exact right age for us. And I don't think you have the same appreciation of this film that I do, but it's directed by Joel Schumacher in 87. It's The Lost Boys.
Yeah, this was so the cool movie when we were in year 7.
Oh, my God, this movie.
Everyone was talking about it.
Before you and I even met, clapped eyes upon each other, this is coming into puberty, coming into being wanting to be cool and whatever else. This film, I know it's ridiculous now, 35 years later.
Is it? No, I mean, this is still a classic.
Think, this is cool? You fucking idiot. But like then, holy shit, Kiefer Sutherland. Jamie Gertz was one of the hottest.
Yeah, man.
Ever for me.
When she turns up in Seinfeld, he's like, oh my God, it's that girl from The Lost Boys. Uh-huh.
Alex Winter, you know, fresh off, or just before, I should say, he goes into Bill and Ted.
Ah, he was in this, wasn't he? I remember some Corey Haim.
And then of course, Corey Haim is Jason Patrick.
Yeah, Michael. But Kiefer Sutherland, bro.
I said that
already. Oh, did you say? Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Lady of the Vampires. And then the Corey Feldman as one of the Frog Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Like the cast is fucking on point. The visuals are on point. I think what really sells this film, though, is just how, apart from cool it is, how it finds the right balance between humor and horror.
That's why it became like a badass. Like if you liked The Lost Boys when you were in 1987, mm-hmm. we were in year 7. It was like, yeah, I'm cool. I like these sort of horror movies that are like cool, man. Like yep. There was a bit of that going on, right? And like it was weird. Like if you look at like Corey Haim, I remember in one of the scenes, he's got a poster of Rob Lowe in his room.
That was weird.
And I'm like, what? So okay,
fine. That's fine if he's into Rob Lowe, but he's clearly not.
No, but he wasn't. Straight. So it's like this doesn't make any sense. But okay, set designer, whatever you say. So I'm fine with it. I think Kiefer Sutherland was the coolest thing about this, though.
Kiefer Sutherland.
It's just great, right, Michael.
Great. So basically, if you don't know, you know, I assume you do.
Please, yeah, sorry, go on.
A group of young vampires, hence The Lost Boys. So a bit of a riff on the Peter Pan myth. They are haunting where it is Santa Cruz or the like, the murder capital of America, because murders are a lot there because they feed on people and kill them and whatever else. And
because they're vampires.
Yeah, family moves in. Jason Patrick, Corey Haim is the younger brother.
Mm-hmm.
And they start to target Michael, the older brother, and try to convert him to become another Lost Boy, primarily because Jamie Gertz, even though she's meant to be Kiefer Sutherland's girl, is kind of into him. And then
Jason Patrick, to be fair.
Well, then it becomes Corey Haim's character trying to fight these vampires off whilst also not losing his brother and then engaging the Frog Brothers to help him.
Ah, yes, the Frog Brothers. You know, let me tell you something, Paul. Remember that scene that everyone used to talk about in this movie where he's got the bow and arrow and he takes motherfucker out and goes and hits the fucking, like, the hi-fi
button?
Death by Stereo! Even when I saw that, I went, why does everyone love this scene? Death by Stereo is the absolute most lame thing to say if you bust a cap in a vampire's ass.
But nowhere near as cool as when Grandpa drives in and the steaks all come flying off the truck and him.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that was the shit.
And at the very end of the film was, one thing I could never fucking stand. Oh, he didn't say fucking. But about living in Santa Cruz, all the goddamn vampires. And it's just the rest of the family who have survived staring at him open mouthed because he's just been this annoying, idiosyncratic, eccentric.
I'm remembering it now. That moved in. Yeah.
Brilliant. Brilliant filmmaking.
Nice one. Yeah, okay. Yep, sure. This is going to go great for you. although my number six, I must say, is Inception.
Low.
Low, of course.
Oh,
of
sorry.
Course.
Low.
Low. In case no one knows what's happening now, Paul is emulating the blah from Inception.
You got it. You laughed. That's all it is. There's a good chance at least three other people laughed as well.
Three is high. So, all right, everyone. Inception, I probably don't need to tell you about if you're listening to this show because you know it and you'd probably love it. But I can tell you this, that when I first saw it, I was already impressed. One, that, I mean, this is where Christopher Nolan says, yep, I can do whatever I want. All right. Because after you make people love Inception, which is so difficult and asks so much of the audience yet makes it like enjoyable, you can then go ahead and do shit like fucking, what was that, Tenet. You can just go, you know what, fuck
God, you.
I don't even
need to turned hard on fastest, Tenet would be your number one.
It just doesn't make sense and he doesn't give you enough information. But he does in Inception, people. And I remember just watching it again recently-ish for the show. And I forgot completely the opening scene where Leo DiCaprio was in the dark and shooting people and catching the shell out of his gun. I'm like, oh, that's so cool because he doesn't want to make sound. I'm like, you know what? That's cool as shit. So I love all that sort of stuff. But the actual movie itself is probably, I've never really seen anything like it since.
That's fair.
Certainly not Tenet. So it's, there you are. I mean,
Inception is an extravaganza of the senses. It is an assault really on the senses in a good way.
Completely.
In a good way. It catches you out. It's intriguing all the way through. It perfectly doles out the exposition. And then somehow in the last hour of this movie, once you know what's going on, manages to make you think even harder to keep up with what's happening. And yet, as it happens, you are completely blown away by what is depicted on that screen. As they go down through the levels to get to the deepest level for the first time to make an idea be incepted in their target's brain. Something they've never tried before. Just the whole concept is brilliant.
The idea of going dream within a dream within a dream and then that affects the time is already just like, what? Of course that
cool
makes sense.
It's cool as fuck. I mean,
so
it
cool.
Does it? But doesn't,
no, no.
It works.
That, like, because you know that you have a dream that might last weeks in your dream, but you woke up and you've only been dreaming for 10 seconds. So now time is fucking irrelevant. And that's why it's cool.
But even the scenes in which that's conveyed to you. So there is exposition dumps aplenty in this film, but they're done in an entertaining fashion. When he's sitting there in the Parisian sort of cafe with Ellen, at that stage, Ellen Page and Elliot Page, and asking them to, you know, how did you get here? And they're like, what?
Yeah.
And then the streets start folding and shit. To illustrate,
the how did you get here thing
a
is
dream.
Huge. If you ask yourself that
is
in a dream.
An amazing question, which myself as a psychologist had never thought to ask myself in the middle of a dream.
So cool, right?
Yep.
Like it just, and the even that, you know, the visual of the city opening, like that, just watching that on a screen, like I was like, what's happening? We've never really seen that before. Now it's sort of, you know, Doctor Strangey. But before that, it's like, whoa.
Well, it's not Doctor Strangey. Doctor Strangey's Inception.
That's what I'm saying. Now you see it in Doctor Strange, but it wouldn't have happened without that scene in Inception, bro. It would not have gone that way. I'm sure of it. So, and boy, did I have a thing for Juno. Like, or whatever you would call
Ellen Page.
Yeah,
at the
so now
Elliot
I know.
Page.
It's like if someone says, hey, dude, if you ever had to fuck a guy, who would you be? Him, her, him,
Elliot,
her,
Elliot Page,
him,
them.
Him, him.
Them yep. is your
I'm tapping that
pronoun.
Shit all. Okay, so.
Fair enough.
Hey,
fair
go.
Enough. I'm sticking with Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell?
Yeah.
Oh, look, if I'm honest, it's Henry Cavill. But all right.
Of course it is. Of course. All right, then. So we're going to move on now to the top halves of the list.
Wernstrom.
My number five is going to offend you, Wayne, because I know it's higher on your list.
Go
probably
on.
Significantly higher. It's also from Christopher Nolan. It is The Dark Knight.
You ready for this, Paul? It's not on my list.
Wow!
Don't worry. You will see why. You will see why. Just keep
lost
going. Keep going. Keep going.
Can't do
it's
this.
Okay. I told you, Paul. This is your list. Keep going.
I can't. I don't get it.
Keep going. Keep going.
I don't.
You'll see by the end. You'll see what's going on at the end. I promise.
Oh, you're putting a different one on there. Oh.
Just let's talk to you about The Dark Knight.
Wow. Wee. Jeez.
And I say...
Could it be the new Batman?
I say openly... hey, look, I'm full of surprises, son. Don't even worry about it, okay?
Now I'm torn between this and another. This is the, to me, it's the superior Batman film. I know we've just had the Batman.
I agree.
We've just had this one, whatever. It's better than, I think it's better. Lots of people love Batman Begins. I full credit to you. I'm glad you enjoy that one because it reinvented the Batman as Christopher Nolan envisioned.
Yeah.
I think not many people like Dark Knight Rises better. But now we seem to have this whole new wave of people saying The Batman, which has been out for about 3 days as of time of recording, is the best Batman film ever. Not for me, but more power to you if that's your thing and you've seen it 3 times already. And great. This film is the perfect mash of comic book sensibility with crime film, with dark, gritty take on a previously fantastic character.
Yep.
I mean, other than Batman Begins, of course, but as well as the fact it doesn't, if you took out Batman and just stuck in there Martin Riggs,
yep,
or Tango and Cash, or, you know, my point being,
any hero.
Someone who's a hero,
yep,
doesn't have to be a guy who's a bat and whatever else and was chasing this psychopathic villain called the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
It probably would have worked.
The only scene that wouldn't have worked as well is Batman in the interrogation room with the Joker.
Sure.
But I know what you mean. He's making it.
Imagine
he's made
it
so real.
High level police officer then. Maybe it's Commissioner Gordon's chasing him just alone and we just got rid of Batman. Mm. I know that seems weird to imagine.
No, there's actually lots of Batman comics like that.
Oh, okay.
Where Commissioner Gordon's the guy.
This film would have worked on that level too.
I agree. This is the height of the Nolan saying, all right, listen up. There's a guy dressed like a bat walking among police and talking to people. And it's supposed to be believable.
Yep.
For him, I don't question it for a single second. He's there and I'm happy that he's there. He's talking with like dudes in, dressed like this. I'm happy he's there and I believe it all.
To my mind, this is also one of only arguably 3 films that surpasses the original film clearly.
Oh, yes. It's better than all of them and it's the... Look, I'll say this. It's the best Batman movie there is. That's
100% agree.
Yeah, that's it. So,
and I wasn't 15 when I watched this movie. I wasn't 19. You know, that age when everything's the best thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
I was in my early 30s when I watched this movie, and it just blew me away. I've owned it on every iteration ever since. Yeah, it's not my favorite Christopher Nolan film, but it's one of my favorite films of all time. So,
are you going to say Dunkirk?
Okay. Yeah, The Dark Knight has to be on one of the best films the Warner Brothers ever released, and that's why it's my number 5.
Best superhero film, you think? I know, it's tough, isn't it?
Look, I really like Logan.
Which one? Logan? Yeah.
I really like Into the Spider-Verse.
It's really tough.
And I really like Avengers Infinity War.
And Avengers?
No, Infinity War.
Infinity War better than Avengers?
That much better than Avengers.
Yeah.
Okay. I've rewatched them all with my daughter now.
And Infinity Watchmen. War is, I love Watchmen.
Yeah, sure. Infinity War is head and shoulders above every other Marvel film for me.
I don't know how I would do that list if we did that show.
We're going to. We're going to count all Marvel films after.
Marvel's fine. Marvel I can put in order. But even that's hard though. So
Again, we keep making this list of the last 10 shows or whatever we do. Maybe one of the last ones you do is the top 10 superhero films of all time.
That's so hard. Yeah, okay.
I know. I know.
What,
go out with a bang,
happen?
Man. Go out
Who
the bang.
Knows how it goes? Yes, okay.
All right, that's my 5. What about yours?
Okay, my number 5 is The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Da-da-da. I don't even know the theme. All right, so...
I don't have it up on screen. Oh, I do.
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Okay, people. The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Why would you even start?
Because the essence of the call seemed like it needed theme music. I probably could have sold it, to be honest with you.
Wait, that's James Bond. Jeez.
See, that's what I'm saying. Everyone would be fine. Everyone, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. is a Guy Ritchie film that has Henry Cavill and Cannibal Dude Armie Hammer as the two leads. And... It is set in the 60s. It is a spy thriller. And it is...
Is it now?
It is absolutely...
This is an absolute...
Pure... This movie has so much heart and awesomeness.
If this snuck in at 10 or 9, that's fair. I know how much you loved it.
I've seen this many,
better
many
than
times.
Lethal Weapon 2. What else has been on the list so far?
Inception. Tango and Cash. No, more favorite than Inception. If you said, if you want to watch this one or the other one... Man, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. is going before Inception. I'll watch that again before Inception and have on many occasions.
Shorter. That's it.
Inception asks a lot of you. A Man from U.N.C.L.E. just wants
it
you to be happy.
Yeah, it asks nothing of you.
No, it wants you to be happy,
man.
It
asks you to believe that shitness is good.
So cool. This is the best movie. It was one of the best. It's actually one of my favorite movies for sure.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely. Henry Cavill is the shit as that Napoleon Solo guy. And the Euro-ness, yes, look, there's a lot to do with costume, okay? It's a beautiful film. The cinematography is amazing. It amazingly kind of bombed. Okay.
Basically.
Okay, amazingly kind of bombed. I think it was like the, it made like 100 and something and it cost about 72 million or something like that. So it's that kind of film. But I actually think it's Guy Ritchie's, can I say best work? I can say most favorite work.
Holy shit.
Yeah,
what
I love it.
What have I done to deserve this bullshit?
I'll watch this over Lockstock. I'll watch this over Rock and Roller. That was Paul's soundboard.
Snatch?
Yeah, I'll watch it over Snatch, bro. God. It's better to look at. It's better to look at.
Here's Wayne on the soundboard again.
This makes complete sense to me.
Yes, it does, motherfucker.
I absolutely love this thing. And also, I think this is some of the best cinematography I've seen in terms of how gleamingly pretty it is. By the way, opening scene, car chase, you got to watch that thing. It is something else. Everyone's forgotten about it. It is absolutely something else with this whole cool shit going on.
Wow.
Very cool. Because it's old shitty Russian cars trying to get across the border. Very fucking cool.
Wow.
I'm telling you, man.
I'm stunned.
The man from Uncle.
Where it is on your list.
Say Uncle.
No. My number four is the greatest, in my opinion, Martin Scorsese film. The film he should have won the Academy Award for. This film should have won the Academy Award. It is the best gangster film that's ever been made. It's Goodfellas.
Not bad. Not on my list.
1990. Lower than The Man from Uncle.
What did we talk about, Paul? The end of the movie where I don't like it. So I'm not going to... It's not one of my favorites. It's just awesome. This is an awesome film. No doubt, boo. No doubt.
The Rise and Fall of Henry Hill, a real-life half-Sicilian Brooklyn kid who rose through the ranks of the mafia and eventually turned states on them and had to go into hiding. What a movie. What performances. This is Ray Liotta's making of. The reason we still see him to this day, 32 years later, in gangster films in... What was the one where he was recently the crime boss and whatever, and he was... The Many Saints of Newark.
Sorry, it's Newark, yeah.
This is the film that's responsible for that.
Absolutely.
Bobby De Niro, he's not even taking over the screen here. He's just perfectly playing sort of second fiddle to Henry and Joe Pesci's character. Just Joe Pesci. This is the bloke 1 year before who was in Lethal Weapon 2. Do you want to talk about good actor?
Yeah.
The fact that he is so terrifyingly unpredictable in this movie, and in that film is like, okay. Get so far away from the drive-thru before you realize you're fucked.
This is why I got... Apparently Joe Pesci, because Louis C.K. talked about him. He actually had this conversation where he wrote a film for Joe Pesci and gave it the script to him. And Joe Pesci goes... He calls him back and goes, listen, I've been looking at your stuff. You're not a very good comedian. And he goes like, you know, so I think you should do something else. But this movie, I'm not going to do it. But apparently it's a bit like that. But for him to do comedy like that after doing a role like this, first of all, Martin Scorsese...
Other way around, but yeah, sorry, comedy first.
First one, yeah. But yeah, even better. Martin Scorsese
of course comes
looks at
back
that.
To the role as Leo gets after Goodfellas.
Well, this is the thing, though. How visionary are you as a director to go watch Joe Pesci do that and go, he's going to be my enforcer guy or my just the guy,
look,
the energy
not
I want?
I'm overly familiar with Joe Pesci's career before Lethal Weapon 2.
I'm so not either.
Maybe he really showed a lot in those other bits and pieces, but
I have
the
no idea
range on this dude, you know?
You know what's funny about Goodfellas, right? When those scenes where Robert De Niro and him are stomping on people,
yeah.
It actually looks comical. If you watch those scenes, Robert De Niro's foot flails before it hits its mark every time. It's actually, the effect is comical. I actually remember laughing. I actually laughed when I saw people.
When Robert De Niro's trying to stomp on people's head in The Irishman, that's comical.
No, that's comical because it's shit looking. Yeah, exactly. But this one here, and even that, like, this motherfucker's alive. Blam, 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 stab, stab, stab. That's comical, sort of. Like,
but what a start to that movie, and then we backtrack and we see it all and the freeze frames. And this
music.
Is narration. This movie is how you do narration.
Yeah.
It's speckled throughout the film. We constantly see Henry's perspective.
Consistency is important to Paul, everyone.
Well, it's also important to filmmaking. Don't do one fucking color palette and then change to another.
He's still having a problem with the Batman. All right.
Goodfellas, what a film. And it's an easy high on this number four.
Fair enough. And my number four, Paul, is Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yes, of course it is.
Of course it had to be. Everyone,
this one I have no qualms with. Unlike Man from Fucking Auntie.
Oh, man. I love that one about as much as I love this one, honestly. This is...
How about Man from Cousin?
Okay, man. If that's what you want to call it.
Man from Grandfather?
I don't know where this is coming from, everyone. The low point.
They're all lame. It's jokes like the movie.
Balls. All right, everyone. This has got Robert Downey Jr. being a charm machine and Val Kilmer and Michelle Monaghan and a bunch of other folks. And it's about this Bob Downey Jr. This is his movie that came back with after he was jailed and everything. It's his comeback movie, okay? And he's like this crook. He stumbles into an audition, gets cast by accident because he's crying for real, goes to Hollywood, gets caught up in this sort of like potential murder thriller plot. It's done by Shane Black. I... still say this is definitely film noir. Or film, sorry, neo-noir.
Oh, please, can we not go down that road again?
But it is set
irrelevant to this list.
You're right, I should never mention that again. It's set in the New York party scene. It's not New York, LA party scene. Mm-hmm. And Shane Black did it because Shane Black does parties like this in real life, apparently.
Yeah. And also, it's kind of a Christmas movie.
It's a Christmas movie because Shane Black apparently
lives in Christmas land.
Hey, man, I love it. The nice guys, I love all that shit, okay? And I actually think to myself that, again, not a rising success, this film. Was not. But
it's definitely developed a cult following. Like, this has got a lot of people who love this movie.
Yeah. And here's Narration City, Paul. Because Rob Downey Jr. is funny each time he opens his mouth.
That's good.
It plays like a motherfucker. That's good. And I really
no don't. Arguments.
Yeah. So there you go. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. If you haven't seen it yet, I suggest you do.
Yeah. For you, I get why this is so high. My number three is Inception.
Nice
one. Straight back to you, sir.
Completely. My number three is The Prestige. Yeah.
So this is better for you. This film is better than The Dark Knight and Inception.
More favorite, yes. We already said about this. We talked about this, Paul. Everyone, The Prestige is a...
So if you had a choice between those three films, you would watch The Prestige first.
So what's the three again? The Prestige?
Inception and Dark Knight.
Yeah, I would. This.
You're a lying sack of shit.
No way.
You would not. You would watch The fucking Dark Knight.
It's too long. Well, no, it's...
What do you mean so? This film is... like 20 minutes shorter.
The Prestige is it?
That's my guess.
It feels much shorter to me. And this is your Christopher Nolan right here, my friend. This is
okay, look it up. You keep talking.
Okay. Everyone, it's a period thriller set in Edwardian London. And there's two rival magicians. One's Hugh Jackman. The other one's Christian Bale. And this tragic death of an assistant basically forces them against each other.
I was almost spot on. There's 22 minutes difference.
Okay, well, bully for you. So... now it becomes so much more than a magician show when David Bowie's in this, for Christ's sake, and he's involving Tesla and people in there, and the line between science and magic becomes a certain thing. But the kicker at the end was such a boot in the guts that got me that I'll remember it forever. And
fair enough.
Then when you go through the movie to actually see how this works out and stuff, it's a typical shouldn't work because it's too complex, but Nolan made it work thing. And it's the first time for me that he did that. Or maybe Memento is the first time he did that. But
that's way more complicated.
Yeah. So, but this is, I just loved the way it looks as well. It's amazing. It's just makes me feel almost classy that I like a film like this. Right? Because I'm not, but it makes me feel that way. Does it make sense, Paul?
It doesn't make sense it's so high. Not to me.
No.
The film's fine.
None of these things will ever make sense.
No, the film's good. The film's a very good film. I do acknowledge that. And I don't have a qualm, again, with it being a list. I'm just like stunned about what it's higher than.
Yeah, well, you know, this brain.
It's not on your list.
Didn't come with instructions, Paul. You'll see by the end, Paul. Oh, you'll see by the end.
Wow. Well, we've only got two spots left. My number two. This was a really hard choice. My one and two.
Yeah.
If you followed all the show, you know what my one and two is going to be.
Yeah, but if you have a brain like a sieve like I do, you don't know.
Which way it's going to be. My number two is Mad Max : Fury Road.
I mean, okay. Yeah, look, it's very good. It's just
not a brief. Look down on me. I know we've heard about it before, but again, going to be true to the brief. What's my favorite
Absolutely. No, I agree.
I believe in arguably one of the best films that Warner Brothers has ever produced. This film is an aberration. How do you have a sequel 30 years after the previous one, which surpasses all of them?
This is the film that Hollywood execs will point to and say, yeah, I know it's been 80 years since that movie, but did you see Mad Max Fury Road? Do you know what I mean? That's what they're doing.
This changed the game. Honestly, I do believe that. And this is why we have the Halloweens and the Screams and all these other fucking Zoolander 2s and all this shit coming back to us now. Because of Mad Max Fury Road. Because George Miller... had clearly had 30 years worth of ideas bubbling around in his... Oh, okay. By the time it came to 25 years worth of ideas bubbling around in his mind. And when they brought it to the screen, it sang. And I don't know if you know this or have heard about it, but it's recently come back to the fore again, as much as it's one of the most popular cult films. Not even cult film. This film made a lot of money because the book's been released about the making of this. Did you read about this?
No.
Charlize Theron and Tom Hardy both interviewed. Hated each other's guts.
Why?
And if you believe the other side interviews from people who worked as camera grips and whatever else and producers, Tom Hardy's to blame. Hardy is a consummate unprofessional.
Is that so?
He goes into character mode. Mad Max doesn't keep to a time. I'm not coming onto set when I'm meant to be on call.
Oh my God.
Whereas Charlize Theron apparently is the consummate professional.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Who is bang on time with the crew and doesn't want to put anyone out and is nails everything. and they hated each other.
That, I would hate anyone who turned up late on purpose to a fucking job.
Got to the point where they had to bring in like extra people to communicate between the two of them. And that fight, one of the reasons why now they're now saying this film is so magic is that early antagonism between them when they're trying to kill each other, it was fucking real.
That's cool.
It's all there on screen. And then by the end, apparently they had finally, by the end of the film, found a way to work together. I don't know. It probably wasn't shot sequentially.
Yeah.
The last scenes probably weren't the last scenes. Yeah, so yeah. We're reading into that. But still, by the end, they had found some mutual respect for each other, but it took a long time to get there. And Charlize didn't feel safe around him.
What?
Not in terms of him being a sexual predator, but just like he could just lose his shit. She was that worried about him.
What? As in get angry and shit?
Yeah.
Why? Because he feels that's method?
Because that's Mad Max, right? And he's crazy. He's been traumatized.
Mad Max isn't even really like that. He wasn't like that in this film. He was more of getting his ass kicked the whole time. So, I don't know, man.
Anyway, point being, this is why there was a lot of troubles on this set, primarily because of the two of them.
Do you think George Miller is awesome? Because
I think George Miller is one of the most varied and accomplished filmmakers ever. I agree. I don't like Happy Feet. It's not for me.
You watch Babe? You do that?
I did watch Babe. Didn't do much for me. No. But imagine the guy.
The guy who did Mad Max did that.
Yes.
And then he does this.
But the guy did Mad Max and then Mad Max 2, The Road Warrior, which is also an incredible film.
Yeah.
And then comes back to Mad. And in between, he's done all these other very different films. Hats off to him.
Yeah. Also, isn't he like 90 or some shit?
Well, when he shot this film in 2000, and I think he was 71 at the time of release.
Dude, if I'm 71 and I'm doing gangster shit like this, which, by the way, based on your story about these two and all of the production problems that are known to be have happened with this film,
yep,
he still managed all of that, put it all together, and then spits out this movie, which I assume it kicked ass.
Oh yeah, it made a huge amount of money and was nominated for Best Picture and won about six. I'm making that number up. It could be three. It could be eight. Yeah. Let's say five Technical Academy Awards.
You know, if you're 71 swinging that kind of action, what kind of fucking Superman are you?
And the only reason we haven't had another one since is because there's been a whole bunch of legal fucking, unfortunately, around Warner Brothers and whatever else, and who owns the rights to this, and why we haven't had Anya Taylor-Joy is cast as a young Furiosa in the next film in this universe that's meant to be coming out.
Is that so?
Yeah.
So they're obviously not going to do a sequel.
Not at this stage.
Yeah.
But this film, that sequel should have been out in 2018, 2019 at the latest. It's just, unfortunately, the lawyers have got involved, and here we are all fucking vying over that shit. So, yeah. My number two, Mad Max, Fury Road.
All right. My number two, who knows how you're going to... Actually, you're going to have a problem with it, but let's see what kind of problem you have with it. Disclosure. Disclosure is a film with Michael Douglas and Demi Moore in it, and it is one of my favorite films. God. That's right, buddy. That's how much I like this film. I've seen it a million times, and when I thought about it, to put on this list, I thought, you know what? I might just watch it to see if I really do like it.
And you still love it?
I watched it last night.
All right, man.
I'm like, all right. Dude.
I haven't watched it since it came out at the cinemas. So.
All right, everyone. This is about Michael Douglas. He's the head of a technology company, or he's the head of department at a technology company. The company's owned by Donald Sutherland. He works in this cool glass brick building, and then Demi Moore is hired by the company in a role.
In a cool-ass brick building. There's a lot of those around.
No, his is good. That is a really cool office. And by the way, this is mid-90s, so it's got 90s advanced tech, everyone, okay? And what happens in the film is that Demi Moore gets hired by the company in a role which Michael Douglas's character expected to get, but it turns out Michael Douglas used to bang her because he's Michael Douglas. So, so it's actually made from a Michael Crichton novel, and it's about sexual harassment, but it's about more than that. Because in a shocking twist, Demi Moore sexually harasses Michael Douglas, and it deals with that. And so it's directed by Barry Levinson. In the 90s, he was the director. And just watching it now with everyone in their CRT monitors in the 90s, and they have mobile phones with cool semicircle buttons, quite design forward at the time. Oddly prophetic. Oddly prophetic, because in this movie, when it happened, these company people, they talk to each other via video on their computer screens, which at the time this movie came out was completely unheard of. And like, oh my God, look at that high tech. And now your fucking watch can do it.
I see what you're doing here.
What?
You're like, Paul's been the out there guy like the last week or two. Fuck all that. I am taking back my mantle.
No. This is like, well, here's the thing. If you understand how much of a bitch I am, this makes kind of sense. Think about this drama thing. Because I remember when this came out, Paulie, we actually said to us, this is the absolute beginnings of me and Paul being film buff bitches, right? Mm-hmm. I remember we were at the Cine Center in motherfucking Perth, all right? Yeah, yeah. And we were talking about, it wasn't this movie that we were at, it was like weeks afterwards. And you said to me, well, I think Disclosure is actually the best movie we've seen this year so far. I remember you saying that to me. So I'm like, and it was a drama, and Paul said that without even fucking being embarrassed at all. It's okay to be a bitch like this. And that's why I just have really fun. But also, again, watching it again. By the way, in the book, the actual girl is blonde. And if you put in your head Sharon Stone instead of Demi Moore, it works perfectly. Mm. You know what I'm saying? But it's a great book, too. It's
I
a
really
great
book, too. I put Sharon Stone in my head instead of Demi Blonde. Demi Blonde.
I was talking to a young person recently, and she said that Sharon Stone is still hot now, and she's very impressed. Now, look, sure. I say sure. I say sure to
you. You would.
Again, but a young girl said that, and those girls are very critical. So... I'm down, is all I'm saying. But yes.
Was she wearing tennis shoes?
She was not. It was. It was.
Disappointment.
Disclosure, my number two, people.
That sounds weird now that out of context.
It does.
We have noticed that young people wear tennis shoes to go out, which does not fly in our minds.
At my last birthday party, a girl I know who, to be fair, is like 30 something. She's not actually young.
That's young.
Yeah. Well, for us, it's young, yeah. And she wore a very fetching sort of short jumpsuit thing, but she had white tennis shoes on. It worked perfectly. I thought it worked great.
But I've since that day,
but it's unusual, right? Yeah.
Not unusual. I've walked past things, not gone into because I'm too old to go into those places. And there's this tennis shoe.
It's a thing, right?
A palooza.
Yeah, it's just white everywhere. Tennis shoes. Yeah. You know what?
I think it's great from a perspective of comfort and not fucking up young people's backs and all the rest of that
It
shit.
Doesn't do the things that high heels do, especially for Paul, who's a big fan of those.
That's weird.
We used to call him Stiletto Paul. No, we didn't.
No, we never Jesus did. Christ.
I've decided that now. So,
I've preferred boots.
Anyway. Yeah, actually, Paul's all about them long boots. Them wild women do. Fucking like pretty woman should. Pretty woman. Anyway.
No one wears those either.
Anyway, all right, back to the show.
Back to the show. Paul's proclivities. My 10 through 2 then, revealing my number 1. Clearly your number 1 is not on my list either. So you don't have my 1 or my 2 or my 4 or my 5. I guess this is really going to be an easy choice.
That is the jazz we play on this show, Paul.
One way or the other. My number 10 is Lethal Weapon. 9, 300. 8, The Departed. 7, Gravity. 6, The Lost Boys. 5, The Dark Knight. 4, Goodfellas. 3, Inception. 2, Mad Max. : Fury Road. My number 1. As much as it got me into shit last week, and that's all I'm going to mention about that.
Oh, no.
The Matrix.
Ah, fuck off. What a bitch.
What do you mean, what a bitch?
I know. It's a very good show, Paul.
It was co-produced by. It is one of the seminal cinema-going experiences I've ever had. I have never been more blown away by a marketing campaign, which then delivered when I went to the cinema to see it. What is The Matrix? Went in there like, what is this shit, man? Have never seen anything more stylish on the screen in a first viewing.
It's very stylish. I
never walked out more satisfied from a film. I have just everything from go to woe, my jaw on the floor. The Matrix is one of the greatest films I believe ever made. You can view it from a pure action spectacle. You can view it from the spectacle from the perspective of being transgender. It works across. Of course you can.
How?
The whole thing is what's real underneath versus what's in the real world, the real you coming out.
Oh! Oh, I didn't even think about that at all.
The character switch was initially meant to be a man in the Matrix and a woman outside.
Oh, how
interesting. Or the other way around.
Yeah.
Hence the name Switch. But Joel Silver got involved and just said, nah, that's too big a leap for people in 1999.
I probably agree with for that time. But now, that'd be cool.
Exactly. Like, he identifies as she or she identifies as he. I don't know which one it was.
Yeah. But that's kind of cool. Mm. Okay. I didn't know that.
They cast a woman in the role and blah, blah, blah. So.
And Neo is gender non-specific as a name, I guess. So.
Yeah. And just that whole when you go into the Matrix, you project the view of yourself that you have.
Well, you do look the same as your physical body, except that you've got hair. You know what I'm saying? That's how it is.
Well, but theoretically, why would you have to? You could change all of that.
Yeah, I suppose if you've never known what you look like because you never looked at a mirror, it had to be implanted or somehow you know what you look like.
Yeah, so you're wearing the fetishy clothing and whatever else, but you could change all the rest of it too.
Oh, but that's when you're already born, though. That's when you're already in. I would always wear a suit in if I was Neo. That'd be cool.
You would be like Morpheus. You would have the fucking three-piece suit and all that flying, man.
No, I'd be like fucking Min's. What's his name?
The Merovingian.
Merovingian.
You would have that fucking Merovingian.
Merovingian knot with a scarf that looks like a tie. What, you gangster? All right. Very nice and not and unexpected.
To say nothing of the technological advancements. All right. So shout out David Powell. We know that the Matrix didn't create bullet time. That was Max Payne the game, but they brought it to the screen in a way which changed action cinema.
Well, remember, they had forever. to set up the million cameras around the thing in the semicircle which goes down. The game didn't do that. That was all.
There are scenes in this movie, to this day I watch them, which give me chills. That scene on the rooftop and then fucking he is flying the helicopter and Trinity swings into the building and it ripples out.
Yeah.
But just the crack when she hits at that shot with the music crescendoing from Don Davis. Mm. Oh my God. This movie, unbelievable. Number one. Warner Brothers film ever made for me, The Matrix.
Fun fact, that type of cinematography with the whatever it's called stop motion something. It's not called stop. It's called
camera. And then they use computer generated to move it around. Yep.
Right. The very first time that was used was in a Sting music video.
Really?
Yeah. And it doesn't look anywhere near as nice.
You wouldn't expect it to.
Yeah, but it's kind of interesting. Yeah. So, okay. Very cool. Nice one. My 10 to 1 goes like this. 10, Spies Like Us. 9, Lethal Weapon 2. 8, Swordfish. 7, Tango and Cash. 6, Inception. 5, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. 4,
Cash and Tango.
4, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. 3, The Prestige. 2, Disclosure. And my number 1.
Disclosure.
That's right, baby. It's right. It's right. It's all there. And my number 1 is Batman 89, baby.
Wow.
Batman 89. Now, let me tell you about... I'm not going to tell you about Batman because you know what happens in Batman.
So that's your favorite Batman film.
Yeah.
Having had said the best Batman film was The Dark Knight.
Yep.
Okay.
89 is my favorite, but The Dark Knight is the best.
Okay. Probably won back a lot of votes on that. But please, let me remind you people, Disclosure, Man from U.N.C.L.E., Spies Like Us.
I think if they think about it and don't think about it too much,
it makes sense. I was shafted by my number 10 last week.
Can you let this go,
please? No.
Can you just let it go?
Tell us about fucking Batman.
Yo, let me tell you about the Batman advanced screening that I saw. It was the first one we ever went to. Yes, we go to them all the time. When I was like,
motherfucking, now we do, not back then.
Well, back in 1989, whatever.
You might have, I didn't.
Yeah, I was like a kid, so I get dropped off with my sister to go there. It's in Town Cinema in Perth. The hugest affair ever. We were the only kids there. All big wigs. In Perth, we call them personalities, okay? That's people who were somewhat famous in Perth were all there. I sat next to Gary Shannon.
Did you really?
Yeah, he's a local DJ. It's funny. It's stupid. Anyway, and we sat through it.
Did Gary Shannon talk to you?
No. Oh. I just noticed he was there.
How excited, mate? Nah.
He was sitting on his own. So, you know, it was just one of those things. Anyway, I come outside after being blown away by this amazing film where Batman actually wears black instead of gray and blue. And it's a Tim Burton movie. It's gothic this. It's Antoine First sets. All that sort of shit. Then I come outside and they've somehow projected the bat symbol on a nearby building. They've organized that. And I saw a real bat symbol on a building in my city. And frankly, Paul, I felt like Batman.
How long did it take your mum to wash your pants?
I was 15 and hadn't blown my beans yet. So how old are you when you're
99? What?
How old are you in 89?
Surely 14.
Now, when did
how old are you?
No.
Listener? How old were we? 14.
We were 14. Look, I know I dug girls at the time, but I don't know that I'd worked out how to jerk my dick. I may have tried and failed or something. You know, I remember the first porno I ever saw. Anyway, we'll talk about that in a
moving on.
We're not there, okay. But yes, Batman 1989 is the reason I already love the shit out of Batman, but all I knew was that Adam West shit and some cartoons. Then I go see Michael Keaton, which, by the way, I did not agree with when I heard about it. I'm like, Michael Keaton? Working class man?
Michael Keaton?
Michael Keaton, motherfucking Mr. Mom? He ain't no damn Batman. And then he goes and does that. I didn't know he was so cool. I didn't know his jaw was so square.
Last movie I watched, he banged Mackie Q. What a guy.
Yeah, what was that show?
The Protégé.
Yeah, what a piece of shit that was.
I disagree.
Dude, that was...
I haven't finished it.
It's Telstra.
I've got half an hour to go.
All the best, mate. Best of luck. Oh, you like Maggie Q. That's what's going on there. All right, fine.
Who doesn't?
To be fair, it's awesome. But yes, Batman 89, people. If you know me, you understand. If you don't know me, you think I'm a dick. But
No. I think this is way more defensible. This is way more understandable than half your list. Yeah. Batman 89, number one. Totally get it. No arguments.
Well, if you actually...
Not on my list because I don't have the same affinity
that
you have.
Absolutely, absolutely.
It's Batman's won me over the decades.
Mm.
It's your other films that are fucking shit.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, I think if you're a long-time listener to the show, you're shaking your head, but you're also laughing.
It's all that Wayne
Which
wants.
It's all I want.
Except when next week when he wins the vote again.
No, fucking hell. Suck a dick. Can everyone just vote for Paul so I don't have to hear this shit anymore?
Well played. Well played. All right, that's, look, just run down any ornaments.
Yeah, cool.
I think we are running long on this week.
Sure. So. Last Boy Scout, yeah. Edge of Tomorrow.
Yes, Heat. That was Edge of Tomorrow, also on my list.
I liked Payback. I liked Interview with a Vampire.
Okay.
Shit like that.
Training Day, Mad Max 2, other than Edge of Tomorrow, Lethal Weapon 2, Gremlins, The Goonies, and Police Academy for me.
Sweet.
That's Alice. What about yours? We'll wrap up every episode of the show with your feedback on the topic at hand, a segment that we call the Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with Jamie Davies. Set number 3, Batman Begins. Number 2, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford.
Really? Wow. Because that movie is still going.
I haven't seen it.
It's about 8 hours or months long.
Give or take. All right. And number 1, It. I won't go through the films, which I've discovered that were distributed. But anyway.
Fair enough.
Number two. Jonathan Kidd said Unforgiven. Number 3. Mm. Number 2, The Matrix. Yes. Number 1, a film I thought would be on your list, Wayne, The Fugitive.
Yeah, the Fugitive. It's close. It's close.
Stephen Byrne said, with such a massive selection to choose from, I assume Paul will be apoplectic.
That word.
With at least one movie Wayne leaves off his list, I think you'll be very satisfied, Stephen. For him, Dark Knight, Inception, The Matrix. I look forward to your vote, sir. Josh Raglan said, The Dark Knight, Death to Smoochie at number 2. Robin Williams and Edward Norton, I believe.
Oh.
Very strange film. And Mad Max, Colin, Fury Road. Great choice there, Josh. John Huslander said, have to cross ears here. Number 3, Mad Max, colon. He even put the colon in there, Fury Road. Number 2, Unforgiven. Number 1, Casablanca. In my opinion, a perfect movie. Very nice.
Interesting.
David Powell, patron extraordinaire, said, eventually, after changing his votes several times over, number 3, The Matrix. Number 2, The Prestige.
Yeah, boy.
Number 1, Inception.
Word. Nice. I don't know who he's going with there.
Nicole Presley, another patron to the show, said, first, forgive me. I could not for the life of me figure out how to determine if these were produced by or just distributed, so I probably got it all wrong. Second, these aren't my top 3, but I wanted to play along and shout out some hidden gems.
My girl.
And the first of those is Magic Mike. I don't care what people say. This is a movie is a fantastic piece of film. Yes, Queens, let's break the myth of women being mom or less sexual. I love we finally had a movie that sexualized men for women's visual pleasure, as opposed to the traditional opposite standards, and with a gross of about 170 mil on a 7 mil budget, lots of ladies agree.
Magic Mike is fucking awesome. Steven Soderbergh, and it's Story Boys. It's not a sausage fest.
I've never seen it, so I'm just going to go with yours, and most importantly, Nicole's perspective. Next one, The Perfect Storm. Incredibly done. Great visuals, frightening and tragic and sad. Really great movie based on a true story type film. And lastly, Vegas Vacation, possibly my favorite of the National Lampoon movies.
Really?
Controversial.
I actually don't think that one.
Holy damn, Nicole.
All right.
Brianna Petty said, another patron of the show said, oh man, I almost pulled a Wayne. The Exorcist was only distributed by WB. Good thing I read the entire brief.
I'm fine with all of these.
That's a bingo.
Did like that one. Stephanie Coley said, dang it, does that leave Gone with the Wind out? Since no one else will, I'm going to go all drama, romance, or naked stuff.
I'm down.
Number 3, True Romance. Ooh, jeez.
Is that WB?
Go with Stephanie's take. Number 2, Before Sunrise. Number 1, Purple Rain.
Rain, nice.
Ooh. Okay, Joel Zabara said, number 3, Inception. Number 2, The Intern. Number 1, Doctor Sleep.
I thought you were going to go. Is that Dr. Beat you're doing?
Yeah.
That's good. That's great. I didn't even know you knew that song, man. Awesome.
Dr. Sleep. And lastly, from Matthew Hardinger, said number 3, The Matrix. Number 2, The Departed. Number 1, The Dark Knight.
Blah.
And that is it from this week's podcast feedback. Thank you so much to everyone who got back to us. We're sorry if we didn't get to you in this one. That's it. Episode 362.
All right, kids.
We have not agreed what we're doing.
We don't know what we're doing next week, but we'll get to you real soon about it once we've decided out.
Yeah, we will. And instead, while you're waiting, head over to thecountdownpodcast.com for all your podcast needs. We've mentioned the Facebook community. You can find a link in the show notes. And we host on Podbean. Follow us there if you want to keep up with every episode of the show. And I think we also mentioned the Patreon. The merch store.
Oh, yes. Thecountdownmerch.com. Go ahead and pick up a nice t-shirt with one of my sewage sayings on it. Or even just a logo. Or just anything. Mugs. We got mugs.
Oh, the Clark is the, what do you call it, the hand sanitizer thing?
That's I've got that coming. It's actually not on there. It's not on there.
Hand sanitizer coming from the countdown.
It's an interesting thing that we're doing.
Wayne is trying out. And that's it for this week's episode. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope you've had a lot of fun listening to these very eclectic lists, as we promise, pretty much week in and week out. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
You can't handle the truth.
Disclosure is so 1995.
Sounds like you can't handle the truth, bitch.
We'll catch you next time. See ya.